The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the daily Kitzur Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzur365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Moshe Hillel Kaufman.
Baruch haba, we're doing Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, Siman Kuf Pei Beis, Hilchos Gneibel Gzeila, Sifim Tes Du Tes Zayin. Sif Tes. Afilo lehana is shum hanah min ha-Gneibel min ha-Gzeila, even to have any benefit from the stolen item, kol zman shi biyad ha-Ganav or Gazlin, as long as it's still in the reshus of the Ganav or Gazlin, asur, it's still asur. You can't have any benefit from the stolen item, even though it's in the, as long as the Ganav still has possession of it. V'afilo hanah mu'etis, even a small hanah, shagam ba'aleh lo yu makbidin aleh, that the owners normally wouldn't have been makbid if you had such a hanah from them without permission. K'goin chilof matbeis b'shavyan, like switching some coins for the same amounts. You took a quarter, you wanted 2 dimes and a nickel, or the other way around. So asa b'mayis g'nuvayis agzuris. If that money is stolen, it's not allowed. Because the normally, even though a person would not be makbid, perhaps, did someone else do that. But now that the money is stolen, so the owner is certainly makbid that anyone should have any hanar from it until he gets it back. So too, to go into a house that was stolen because of the heat, you want to go in there to get some shade. Or to go there because of the rain, you want to shelter yourself from the rain. To pass through and use the stolen field as a shortcut, usr, that's usr. A common example a lot of times you see is, let's say, on Tisha B'Av, sometimes people come to shul and they have a milk carton that's from a Chav Yisrael company, and let's say Reuven brings in two, and he's a Baal Chesed, and he goes to you, and Reuven says, you know, I took these cartons. I used to work by a yeshiva, and they had deliveries from the Chol Yisrael company. And so I took two cartons. I use them for storage bins throughout the year in my garage. They're really handy. But for Tisha B'Av, I bring them to shul. I use it to sit on, and I bring the second one I have to lend it to a friend to sit on. So the answer is, well, he's a Baal Chesed. He's a Ganav. He took those crates without permission. The Chol Yisrael company is makbid on the crates. So the halacha is, since the Ganav has it, and there was no Yishashini Rishus or other things that would make it in the possession of somebody else at that time, it still belongs to the owners. So the halacha is that you're not allowed to sit on it, you're not allowed to have any hanah from it, you can't use it as a storage bin, you can't sit on it, and you should let him know that that was so nice and he's such a Baal Chesed, and you do a mitzvah instead of Gemilas Chasadim with it. The mitzvah to do would be the Heshev Sagzela, and to return it to the milk company. Sif Yud. V'lochein, therefore, Mishu Ganav Gazm Mefursim, somebody who's a known Ganav, She'ein Loi Moloch HaChes Elazais, and this is his only trade, that of being a Ganav, and V'chom Amonai B'cheskes Ganav HaGazel, so therefore, every penny that he has is pretty much stolen, because that's all that he does. Also, lahenos mimeni. You're not allowed to have any hanah from anything of his. The also ani lakachas mimeni tzedaka, and ani can't even take tzedaka from him because everything he has a chazaka that's stolen. Now, a lot of times there are situations where a person knows that perhaps someone is not really the most honest in business, and maybe he did indeed cheat some people and rob from some people. However, it's very rare to find a situation where all of a person's money is stolen in these days. Even if someone is doing the wrong thing, it's usually only a portion of the money, and he does have some money that was earned legitimately or somehow other, another way was obtained in a legal fashion. So therefore, if such a person, you know, gives you a gift or he's giving a tzedakah, then it's allowed to be received. It's only a situation where everything that the person has is stolen. Sif Yud Aleph. V'chein, im echad reitze limka eza chayfetz shenira shu ganav, if someone wants to sell something that appears to be stolen, the circumstantial evidence is high, even though it's not 100% conclusive. The guy in Shoyme Paris, let's say the person is in charge of guarding the the fruits from in a field. Shemayichim peres b'makom tzanua, and now they're selling fruits of that field, but privately on the side, so that the owner will not find out about it. Or some other type of person who's selling things, and he's selling it in a way that he doesn't want people to know about it. He tells the buyer, you know, don't let anyone know that I sold this to you. So we see that he's trying to hide the transaction. If the person's trying to hide the transaction, so then that's a good chance that the item was stolen, depending on the circumstances. So also look nice on if the circumstances are such that it seems pretty certain, even though there is still room for doubt, but it's pretty certain that the item is stolen, so you won't be allowed to buy it from him. A lot of times people ask, well, I need to buy a car for my part from a junkyard, and they say, well, everyone knows the junkyards deal in stolen cars. So again, not all the cars are stolen. Probably have some parts that they get stolen, but most is not. So if they're selling it openly, then that's okay. A person could buy from a junkyard. However, let's say you go to a silver store and the salesman there is selling the stuff, and you try to argue on the price, and he wants to sell for $150, you only want to pay $100, and then at the end he says, okay, you know what, I'll charge you only $100, but you got to give me cash, and you know, you can't tell anyone that you bought it, and don't come back here, no returns. So again, if you're dealing with a salesman and he's doing it in a way that the owner might not find out, so then that's something to be suspicious of, and therefore one would not buy something if that was that suspicion. I feel liknois meisha ezadavah sheish lochos he macharis shloim midas bala, and even to buy something from a lady, if we think that she's buying something, selling something that is without her husband's permission, I liknois meish, or to buy from a man. Dava mitachshita isha, a woman's piece of jewelry, which is probably her wife's, or mabusher, or her clothing. Sheish lachos u'maychor shloim midas ishto, that we should suspect that he's selling it without his wife's permission. Asa, so then it's asa. A jeweler told me some lady came with gold cufflinks to him, and she wanted to surprise her husband and sell his gold cufflinks and buy him a different piece of jewelry. And the answer was, I can't do that unless, you know, I know your husband can give me a call and say it's okay, because, you know, she basically said it. She's doing it as a secret to buy him something else. That's without his permission. She can't sell his items without his permission. Sif Yud Beis. Mi shenischalfu lo'ikela b'beis ha'mishta k'dayma. Someone, if his clothing, his coat, was switched in the catering hall, or similarly, usually in the coat room. If by accident you took somebody else's coat, you're not allowed to wear it if it came to your hand. It's not yours. If it's not yours, you can't wear it. The owner didn't give you permission to wear it. So even though it was by accident, you can't do that. And when the owner comes, you have to give it back to him. Even though your coat is missing, so you went. There was only one coat left in the coat room, and you thought, you left the coat there, and you put it on. Afterwards, you realize that it's not your coat, so you have to give it back to the owner. You can't hold it hostage until your coat comes, because what is the owner of the first coat? He has nothing to do with your lost coat. You can't hold his coat hostage. Your coat is missing, not his coat. You have that. You have to give back. The chayin kaveses, so too, a laundry place. A machabeses levabim, that launders for the public, cleaners, as we would call it. They via loy cholok shenis shalay, and they brought him a shirt that does not belong to him. Also a love shirt. He's not allowed to wear it. Eletzach lachzir lebalav. You have to give the shirt to the owner. So if they delivered you Shimon's shirt, so you have to give Shimon his shirt, even though your shirt is missing. However, if the item was many days by the cleaners, that it's for sure the owners would have already tried to find out where their item is. You know, if it was sitting around in your house for 30 days, obviously the cleaners must have tried to the owner must have tried to locate the ayin from the cleaners. As muta laila lavsha, so then you could wear it. Ki mistama soka kaveses as balav, because such a long time passed, then probably the laundry owner paid the owner for the loss. Shama ba'ad chalak hazeh, paid him for the loss, so therefore he already relinquished rights to that shirt. Sif yud gimel. You're not allowed to have any benefit from something that belongs to your friend without his permission. Even though you're certain that when the owner finds out that you took something of his, they'll be rejoicing because they love you and like you so much and that they were able to give you some benefit. They'd still be, they're so thrilled if they would find out in the end. Nevertheless, it's still not allowed to take an item and keep it and consume it without permission. The reason being, as we said the other day, is yish lemidas lehavi yish. You can't relinquish ownership from someone without his knowledge. Lefichach, therefore, hanechnas lepades leginas chaveru, someone goes to the orchard on the garden of his friend. Asaloi lilkai perish lemidas abam. He's not allowed to pick the fruits and eat some without the permission of the owner, even though the owner would be more than happy had he found out that you came to his orchard and helped yourself to a few pears and oranges. Even though the owner of the orchard is your best friend, and as we said, he'll be thrilled that you were benefiting from his Paris. Nevertheless, Kivan Sha'achshav, Eino Yodeh Mizeh, since now he doesn't know about this, Harehu Nene Be'isser, he's getting this Hanar without permission. That's also. Ritzach Lahazi L'Rabim, and one must warn the public about this, Shenechshon B'zeh Machmas Chison Yedir, because they're stumbling in this Halacha, because they just don't know. Now, this is in regards to something that you're taking and consuming, and you're not giving back. However, the Paiskim do agree that if you're borrowing something from somebody and you're going to actually return that same item, so if you are certain that your friend will rejoice and be so happy that he was able to give you that hanor to borrow the item, so then it's allowed even though the owner does not know about it. So let's say it's snowed outside and your neighbor is in Florida and you need a shovel, and you see your neighbor has a shovel in his backyard, and so you want to borrow the shovel to shovel your snow. The answer is, if you are sure that your neighbor would be more than happy that you borrowed the shovel, so then you may do so, even though you can't get his permission. That's okay. As we said the other day, if it's something that no one's makbid on, that's always allowed. But a shovel, some people are makbid that someone else shouldn't use their shovel, so it's not like anybody off the street can go and borrow that shovel, because people are makbid perhaps that someone else shouldn't use their shovel. But if you're sure that this person would not mind that you use your that they use your shovel and they'd be happy about it, so then you can borrow it even though there is no permission. Sif Yud Dalet. Mikol Makom, nevertheless, Mutal Leven Beisa Shel Adam Litein Prusa Liani Olivnei Shel Oyavo. A person, he's not the owner. He's another member of the household. It's his son. It's his wife. He's allowed to give a piece of bread to a poor person from the house, or Oyluv Noishalayva, or to defend his friend's, the owner's friend's son, Shabalabayas, the Balabayas, Shalomidaita, without his permission. Lefishakach nagu balibatim, because this is the way that owners usually behave, that they allow other members of their household to give out small amounts. The Ein Zeh Nikra Shleimidas Abam. This is not called that they're getting it without permission of the owners. Kivan Shekach Nogu, because that is the minig. V'Balim Yoydim Mizeh Minig, and the Balim, the owners, are aware of this minig. So even though we said Yush Shleimidas Lehavi Yush, that you can't relinquish ownership without knowledge, but here it is implied permission from the owners that these household members may give out small items. So it's not like they find out later and then they're agreeing to it. It's, again, it's implied permission that up front they're allowing people to give this out. Mitamzen, for this reason, Mutal Kabel Stokim Anoshim, Dover Muad, you're allowed to accept Stokim from women, a small amount, Shalom Midas Bam, without the knowledge of the owner, meaning without the knowledge of the husband. Because this is the normal fashion. And the owners, the husbands, they know that this is the way that's usually done, and therefore it's as if there's implied permission. How much is a small amount? That would depend on the wealth of the husband. For some people, a small amount would be very little. For other people, a small amount would be considered a lot compared to a poor person. So everything is relative. The chayin bepardes, and same thing with an orchard. Mu'ragil boy, if he's usually going to that orchard, lechol mipei oisev, and eating from the fruits, midas abam, with the owner's permission, mutter, it's allowed him to go without the owner's permission in this case, because it's, again, an implied permission, chayin ki oisev, is there anything similar to this? Like we said the other day, that if you go, you're being told to sit at a table and there's a fruit bowl there, obviously it's understood. The fruit bowl is put there so that the guest can have some piece of fruit. It's not something that you have to ask permission for. Sif Tazvav. Hamaitzi Peris B'derech Tachas Ilan. If you find fruits that fell from a tree, Shunait Aladech, that the tree that's in a field, it hangs over the road, and now there's fruits on the road. If it's the type of fruits that normally fall off the tree, and usually when they fall, they get ruined. Or even if they don't get ruined, or most people who pass by are nachrim that would take those fruits if they were found on the floor. Or these are the type of fruits that once they fall on the floor, an animal will usually come and eat it. And now you're passing there, and the nachri didn't take it, and the animal didn't take it. The owners, they already gave up hope on those fruits, and mutaris, and you're allowed to take it and eat it. Even though the owner wasn't aware that specific fruit fell, but again, it's a situation of implied permission. They know that certain fruits are going to fall. So when the fruit does, and they know that it probably a nachri or an animal is going to come and eat it. So therefore, they give up already hope in advance, even though before it fell, but they already gave up hope on those fruits that fell. So therefore, once it fell, you're allowed to eat it and take it for yourself. But if it's the fruits do not get ruined when they fall, and most people passing by are Yidins, and they wouldn't take something that's not theirs. So asun mishum gezel. So then it's also to take that fruit because of gezel. The owner does not relinquish his ownership. He doesn't have yirsh on it. And if the fruits belong to yisaimim who are under bar mitzvah, and therefore, since they're orphans, and they're under bar mitzvah, they can't give any mechila. So asun b'chol inyan, then you're not allowed to have the fruits regardless. You're not allowed to eat them, even if it's a place where roiv nachrim go, and even if it's a place if they have animals that eat them. Why? Kiaktanim ein hayush v'mechila shem klum. Because by a child, yush, giving up hope and mechila, does not do anything. You have to be a gadol in order to be meichel and have yush. The yush and mechila of a katan is not valid. Sif tezva, Zion. Dina de machusa dina. The law of the land is law. So, of course, when it comes, you know, if the government wants to charge taxes, they're allowed to do that. They own the land. They're allowed to set the rules. They want to set that you have to get a driver's license if you want to drive. They have the ability to do that, and they control that. However, what they don't control is when there's a machlokes between two Jews. So even though, as we said the other day, that if two Jews agree that they want to go to the secular courts to settle the dispute, it's still usur. And the reason is, someone might say, well, dina de machusa dina, the law of the land is law. That only refers to things that are between the government and the populace for the most part. But the way we treat, let's say if we have an argument with a nachri, so we could go with dina de machusa dina if we wish. And, you know, if we're the one who deserves to win based on that, of course we could win like that. But when it comes to Yidden, we have Chayshin Mishpat, we have the halachas that the Torah gave us on how to settle disputes between the two, and Dina de Malchusa doesn't come into play. It has nothing to do between a dispute between two Yidden, whether it's a landlord-tenant dispute, whether it's a business dispute. Sometimes, though, if there is a Dina de Malchusa, so it becomes a minig, meaning if the Malchus says a certain thing, and so everyone starts to behave that way because they're dealing a lot with Nachrim, and then it becomes a minig that even amongst the Yidden, that it's an implied understanding to the deal that it's going to operate in a certain way, because that's the minig, that's the way the deal usually happens. So then, in such a case, that would play a role in Halacha, not because of Dina de Machusa Dina, but because if we say that if nothing was stated otherwise, normally most transactions are based on whatever the minig is, and if the minig is to act in a certain way under a certain situation, so then that would be implied as if that was the deal, even though it was not specifically said. So not that Dina de Malchusa is the reason why that would be the halacha in that situation. It's more that the Dina de Malchusa created a minig, and the minig, therefore, is what's binding the two parties, because if nothing was said otherwise, we assume that things are based on the minig. Sometimes people ask, if, you know, the speed limit says 50 miles an hour, so if they go 55, are they over Dina de Machusedina? Maybe if they go 51, they're over Dina de Machusedina. And the answer is, not that we're advocating speeding, but Dina de Machusa is referring to something that the government set up for a certain reason, and the populace has a reason for it. They don't want people to speed because that causes accidents, it causes unsafe conditions, and people get hurt, and there's expense for police and ambulances, etc. So, but if someone goes 55 in a 50-mile zone, again, not that we're advocating speeding, but that's not, you're not oibidin the Malchusa, because the populace, who's the Malchus? It's the populace here. The populace, it's not makbid that people go 55 in a 50-mile zone. They are makbid that you shouldn't go 95 in a 50-mile zone. But the populace is not makbid that you go 55 in a 50-mile zone. And since they're not makbid, so therefore you're not oibidin the Malchusa. The Malchus is the populace is not makbid on that, even though if the cop pulls you over for going 51, you would get the ticket, and they would be correct, and would win. But if you want to take that risk, that you wouldn't be oibidin the Malchusa dina. Cold tooth.